Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2687. That's 2687. I'm Carol Levine and I am Vice President of NASCA. And tonight we're going to have our open mic night, okay? And this is where we need for people, you know, to call in if they have questions. And we do have on with us tonight a doctor, well, I call her a doctor, but she's Deborah Schluck and she is a pastor. And she certainly does have her social degree and all different kinds of things. You can, she's trained in ministry, and she's a social worker as well. So if you have questions that you'd like to have answered, okay, we're all survivors here, okay, most of us anyway. And 99%. I know. But that's okay. That's all right. You know, listen, we need the normies on too, as I call them. I call them the normies. So, Mark, that means you're normal, and Michael, that means you're normal, too, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, okay, listen, call in tonight. The number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And I'm going to read the mission statement before we get to our show. I think tonight that Deborah would like to speak about healing, but if there's other things that other people want to speak about, please do. All right, let me go to the mission statement, and that is we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so from two different ways. Number one is educating the public, and that especially is related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. I mean, it's getting better, but we have a long ways to go. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to the adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Prevention for me is one of the most important, but all three are very, very important. Okay, so we got that out of the way. So we have a panel that's building slowly, but I would like more people to call in, 646-595-2118. I know a lot of you guys listen to the computers and listen to the archives later, and that's fine, but it's always nice to have a panel, too, because it makes the show livelier. And look, you have questions you need answered. We have Deborah here, Deborah Schluck. She is a pastor, but she's also a social worker. And she's been in the field for many years, okay? So, anyway, okay, with that being said, I will go to her right now. Now, we have Deborah, and we have Mark from Los Angeles, and we have, yeah, why did I say that? He's from L.A., that's what's here. My mind always thinks, I was thinking about San Francisco before. I'd been there, and it's not the same, let me tell you. That's what's going through my head. And we have Michael Lee from Texas. Okay, that's what we have right now, and, of course, myself, as you can hear. You lucky people, you. Anyway, give us a call, and I'm going to go to Deborah, because we had spoken a little bit earlier about healing and the importance of healing. And then I'd like to go down to Michael and see what he thinks about all that. Michael, we had on, I had the pleasure of being the host when he was on a couple weeks ago, a couple Fridays ago. And, wow, you're a powerful dude. Yes, you are, Michael. I really like you. I think you're great. And we had a wonderful show. And, you know, I got a lot of positive feedback because he's head of the crime sexual unit, and that's in Texas. And you could ask him a lot of questions, too, if you called in. Okay. Deborah,
uh-huh.
Let me ask you something. Let me ask you something about healing, okay, about healing.
Okay.
Someone comes to you, and they've been horribly beaten up, say, in their home.
Mm-hmm.
I had this posed to me the other day, so I can use this. They've been beaten up horribly in their home. They're not getting any attention from their parents, and a sibling had beat them up. And no one seemed to care in the family. And the kid is turning bad, okay? The kid is turning bad. And there are already bad people in the family. And when I say bad, they're like gangbangers or all kinds of things. And she also works, Michael, with, you know, drug addicts, which I used to do too, and all this other stuff. We're also like related here with a lot of the things that we've done. And so what do you do? How do you say, how do you speak to this person about healing? They want to heal. They want to move on. They don't want to feel bad about life anymore, about people anymore. They just want to be normal. What do you say to them?
Well, if they are in sort of therapy, okay, they won't know what normal is coming from that kind of family. And by the time they get to, we'll say, the police, or they get to foster care, or they get in the system, they've already got very deep what they do call acute childhood trauma. They may have formed multiple personalities, may have started doing drugs. I was just watching a video where even children at 10 years old can be addicted to pornography because what has happened in the home. So you're dealing with how do you resolve it. If you remove the child from the family, which we know that happens a lot, and I've been through the court-ordered parenting classes. I have taught the parenting classes to court-ordered parents. And it's just basic stuff. And it's court-ordered. You go through it in 6 weeks. Maybe that's it. That does not change behavior. Give them a little bit of information. But the parents, the siblings, they have issues. But they're never required to go to counseling. They're required to, you know, maybe get parenting classes. And so if you're working with the child, they're going to want to go home because they want their mom and their family. But if their family is very destructive, you have to remove them. And that's where a lot of times in the faith-based, they put the kids in homes. And then eventually the states, how they work it is, the states and the judges, they really believe that a child belongs and is biological property because of eggs and sperm, and they should be returned to the parents. And most family court judges, because I was authorized and as one of their eyes and ears as a guardian ad litem, they hate to terminate the parental rights. You can do that, but that doesn't solve the soul's problems or the spiritual problem. So if you're going to help somebody, parents, siblings, or children, you should be well educated in both mental health, spiritual areas, bonding, trauma bonding, acute childhood. I have worked with some very, very severely abused in every way people, and they have multiple personalities to survive. And you might get one in the office or in the foster home while the other one wants, and it goes back and it wants to go home. It wants its family. And it, you know, and so you're fighting powerful emotional bonding. You're fighting the trauma that's occurred in memories, trauma bonding. You see it a lot. They call it the Stockholm Syndrome. When somebody is kidnapped or something, they'll side with the kidnappers because that's their only way to survive. They know it's not good. That's why they turn to drugs and stuff. But that's what they learn. That's what you do. That's the family. And they get through it the best they can. And if you get them as adults after that kind of life or a teenager, you're already dealing with major stuff. And if you're even a law enforcement, a social worker, a lawyer, you had better have some classes. Okay, just because you got the law, that doesn't solve. And I said in the courtroom, well, the parents have lawyers fighting against the child, demanding to have their property back. How dare you take my property away? That's their attitude. Now, do they love the child? Probably, in a weird way. Do the child love these? Yes. And the judge is caught in between, and helpers and counselors, they're caught trying to separate the abuser and the abused. Okay, and sometimes you can't ever do it. They could grow up, and what happens is the child grows up and becomes either just like the abuser. And if you put them away in prison, now there is a lot of help in prison. Okay, there's counseling and there's therapy. Do they need, sometimes with the abuse, even if it's just yelling, okay, or you're living in constant fear as a child, your cortisol, so you better be a therapist or a helper that knows the biological body, what happens under stress, what's going on in the memory, in the brain, how does the adrenaline, the flight or fight syndrome work, better know about trauma bonding, better know about what happens if you're a child and you are exposed early to sexual abuse or pornography and everything like that. Then if you're a pastor or you're a spiritual person, you better know what's going on spiritually. So you have multiple levels of knowledge and education and books you need to be reading and true stories about, there's some great ones out there about ones called Suffer the Child that Aunt Judith Spencer wrote. She was a psychiatric nurse. It is mandatory reading for people working with these people. It's about people coming into the psychiatric facilities, and they have no memory of this. Watch the movie, The Three Faces of Eve. Watch the movie, Sybil. You're working with those kind of parents and those kind of people out of severe childhood abuse. And
okay, hold on a second.
Okay?
Yeah. I want to get Michael involved here, too. Sybil, I saw that several times. I had to watch it through school. They made us watch that.
Yes, ma'am.
I certainly, yeah, they do that. Michael, okay. Now, I remember what you do. I remember what you do, and your work is wonderful also. And Michael is head of the Crimes of Victims Unit or Sexual Unit, is that correct, for children? Yes. And so he comes across all of this so often, what you're speaking about, where you know, kids are involved, and I worked in detention with the police officers, and
in a state detention, hardcore juvenile delinquent when I was in my early teens. So I've been
there with
the juveniles, and what happens time they get there, almost to, you have to understand child development. A child's brain and what their beliefs are and their ideas of, we'll say, authority is developed by the time they're 5 years old and they hit kindergarten. Whether they
sit
down when the teacher says, take a seat, don't talk. By the time they hit kindergarten, 85% of their development of, we'll say, morals and who's in the boss, is, and that was all learned at home. And the police have a, they really, you know, they have to find the evidence for a crime according to the law. And it does help if a healer or therapist or something knows the criminal law and knows the codes that the police are having to look for. Because you have to, they have to take that with the evidence and go into the and present it to a lawyer and go into the courtroom. And so if you're a person who's going to help people who've been abused, all that information you can get about the law, criminal code, volunteering in juvenile delinquents in prison and jails. There was a thing that happened in Pensacola, Florida, back in the 1990s. The Department of Juvenile Justice, they had tried all these programs to help kids. And they came to the conclusion that no matter what they did, all of their boys, girls, clubs, all of that stuff, after school care, something was missing in the child to help them hold and to really be healed. So they went to the churches and said, help us. You got something. We don't know what it is. Is it peace? Is it love? But there's something among your people and your churches that we as nonprofits in the state cannot provide. And they asked the churches to start after school programs because they knew there was something missing from these programs. And they couldn't quite put their hand on it, but they kind of knew it was a spiritual thing. So they had to call them in to help. And the problem is, you know, a lot of people don't want that in there. They don't want, I can tell you, I've read so many books, that God of the Bible, if there's genuine love, a lot of times the police, they have it. And God can move through that and help people when that atmosphere is there. But a therapist for this child, it's just another number. It's just a job. They want to go home. They don't want to answer like you do, Carol, take the phone calls in the middle of the night. They don't want it, but they want it, okay? The psychiatrists don't. So the love that the kids need or the people, it's not there from the therapy area. Schedule your appointment in 2 weeks, and I'll see you then.
Right.
And
hold on a second. Hold on a second, Deborah. I need to go to the panel because we do that, you know, during the course of the show. I do want to go to Michael because he works with the Sex Crimes Unit Division, and it's with juveniles. So he, too, you know, he understands, he certainly understands, you know, what these kids go through and the court system and how they go before the judge. And in detention, you did the same thing I did. We had to take them before the judge. And of course, social services was there, and they would decide, they would make a decision if the kid was going to go back to juvie or if they were going to go into, you know, into a home. Or if they were going to go back home. Let me ask Michael something here. With the kids going back home, say they come from a terribly volatile situation like I had started to describe in the beginning, what are the chances of that kid turning out good, changing?
Not great.
Right?
I have a good example right now. I've got a case that I'm working today involving a family who had been, you know, investigated by CPS and law enforcement, you know, easily a dozen times over the course of a decade. And there were 7 kids involved. And, I mean, you know, we're seeing the entire gambit. You know, we've got the 2 oldest who are, you know, if you want to, I mean, you know, the very definition of trauma bonding, you know, the oldest girl actually was engaged in what I would refer to as a compliant sexual relationship with her father. And all the way down to the youngest child, you know, they have a 10-year-old girl, they've got an 11-year-old, 12-year-old boy. And the 2 boys, I mean, even all the way down the bottom, you know, they were, even in their forensic interviews, talking about how they can't wait to turn 18 because they're going to go get a job, and the first thing they're going to do when they get some money is go hire an attorney and sue CPS for always putting them back in the same home with their father, who was sexually abusing their sisters and, you know, abusing them. And, you know, if I could get away with it right now, I'd go kill my dad, you know, today. And, you know, it was just amazing some of the things that came out. But, you know, whenever they were removed from that environment, they were placed back with their family. And, you know, their mother, you know, was kind of one of these ladies that didn't have, I mean, she had been abused herself. You know, she didn't have a career or an education to speak of, very impoverished family. And what's interesting about that dynamic is that, you know, she was suffering quite a bit, and her family wasn't very supportive with her, you know. So, and ultimately they kicked, you know, her and the seven kids out, you know. And so she ended up having to go through state services to get a, you know, some kind of a home to keep the kids in. And ultimately, you know, that all kind of fell through, and she, you know, had to basically engage in a voluntary relinquishment of her children for the time being to the state, which I think we talked about last time. There was a lady on that said that she had done something very similar to that because mm-hmm. she needed the help. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's where
right.
this mom is today. And the kids, I mean, it's sad, but, you know, and I mean, they're, you know, on the one hand, they're great kids. And on the other hand, they're bad little kids, you know, and they're hard to deal with and so forth and so on. And I'm sure that, you know, it would not be a surprise to me if we didn't see these kids grow up and either, you know, engage in domestic violence themselves or be victims of domestic violence because they cling to, you know, the things that they know. And kind of like, you know, we were talking about a second ago with the trauma brain, it reminded me of, you know, something I had read in Dr. Bessel van der Kolk's book, you know, The Body Keeps the Score, about how there had been some, you know, professors back in the 80s that conducted, you know, some studies where they had taken dogs and put them in cages, and they locked the cages, you know, and they shocked the dogs, and they subjected them to, like, this torture. Mm-hmm. And when they opened the cage doors and they shocked the dogs, they would squeal, they would, you know, urinate and defecate on themselves, but they would stay in the cages. They wouldn't escape. Mm-hmm. And they had to physically train these dogs to escape that torture because it was such a learned response to stay there, you know. And then there was another study that was done where there had been some rats, and, you know, they had a group of rats that were subjected to a very cold, unforgiving, dangerous type of home environment, and then another group of rats that had a warm, plush, nice, friendly environment with lots of food, and they got them all out into a common area, and they subjected them, you know, to some form of stress, and they were expecting to see that all the rats would go to the nice home environment. But the ones that were conditioned and into the you know, cold, dangerous environment, they went back to that. And it's a very interesting part of that trauma brain that we get conditioned into going back to those things that are dangerous. And we may even know that, but it's the thing that we know, and there's some sort of feeling of, you know, solace or safety in the thing that we know. And it's a very difficult thing for police officers and most people out in the world, you know, to understand that is absolutely a dynamic in any domestic violence, you know, child abuse, mm-hmm. especially with children. I mean, the children don't, like you said, they don't know any different. They don't know what normal is.
Well,
so
that is their normal. That is their normal. They're familiar. They know how to survive. A lot of them, if you ever talk to them, like, they leave their body spiritually, have out-of-body experiences. They form multiple personalities to deal with it. And then when it's over with, you know, they sort of numb out, zone out. They use different words. They feel like they're somebody else. And they get through it, but they know the rules. And then there's that part of them that do love. They want a mommy. They want a daddy. They want a family. And, like, they don't know what's normal. And if you bring them out of that and put them into foster care, they're in unfamiliar territory. They don't know how to act. They don't know the rules. They're waiting to be, you know, abused. They don't know trust. So they are in, like, domestic violence. They will choose to to stay in the bed, because at least they know the rules of it. And to some of them, all the abuse has been translated in their ideas and concepts through words. This is what love is. This is what a parent does to their child. And so it happens, like you said, over time. There are words there that are said, and so when you get those kids, okay, as children into therapy, you really have to understand all of that in the cognitive brain, the biological, what's going on, what, you know, you have to learn to listen, and they will tell you how they survive it. They may not know what's going on. They'll talk to you if they feel safe, but it's in between other things, but they can't solve it. And they think that they feel guilty if they're taken away. They're supposed to be there. I tell people, you can threaten somebody with a look. How many mamas have looked at their kids and given them a look when you ain't supposed to be doing something? You can sexually abuse somebody with your sleight of hands in a prayer circle. I could rub a woman in jail a certain way and give her a little nonverbal communication. So they've learned that, and they would have to have extensive relearning. Then they're going to go through that horrible part that they didn't love me. That wasn't love. Now they're broken in their mind with the memories, and they've got the memories they have. But that's my mom. Is this what love is? It's a hard thing. I've worked with them from children through adults. And you have to be a well-educated person who helps them. And just given the adults' parenting classes, they've been abused in their life. And they're just doing what was done to them, you know, and that's all they know to do. And the men who do it with, do they have a problem? Yeah. What do you do with them? Castrate them? Okay. Chemically castrate them? Can't they control what's going on? Why can't men, why do they have to do the pornography? Women do it too. So there's deeper things that are going on that in mental health training, they don't talk to the master level people. And CPS, just like here, they're social workers. A lot of them just have bachelor's degree. And a lot of them have a different philosophy about families and children versus a mental health psychiatry psychology. Most of your CPS workers, they've been abused themselves. They've never been married. They're not having, they have no families. They just get trained through social work. And their philosophy is reunification with the family.
Okay, let's stop there for a second. Let's stop there, and that's right, because I know that I've seen that many times. And also, too, in the family unit with the children, I lived across the street. I may have told Michael this, but I hadn't told you this. But I lived across the street from a family where the woman was abusive, and the mother was abusive.
Yes.
And she even hit the father. I mean, he'd go out on the porch, his front porch, and he'd keep sweeping and sweeping and sweeping and sweeping. The porch couldn't be dirty. They had five children.
That's his way of dealing with it.
But if you were to ask those children, if they wanted to, some of them are a little bit older, so if you were to ask those children, if they wanted to, you know, be out of that home, they would stand right by their parents and they would say,
yes.
No, 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 I love my mother, I love my father.
They
the mother
do.
Was beating them. The father was ineffective because he was afraid of the mother. And, you know, and it was a horrible scene to live across the street from, okay? And so I've seen that. And, of course, we know that even, you know, in the system, we've seen that before. And Michael, I'm sure, has seen that a lot, too. You know, where
what
the kids
you run
rather
into,
than...
Well, what they
yeah.
do is they run away from home, okay? Now, then they
well, they end
leave,
up doing
they
that.
Run.
Yeah.
And then they get into prostitution, into the drugs, into the gangs. And it's still abusive, okay? And but they think, you know, a lot of them just run. And, you know,
I ran like heck, you bet.
And the pimps are waiting at the bus stops for them, the drug cartels, you know, and they know they're already damaged. This is what I get irritated with human traffickers. People who are working with human trafficking, they think the trafficker is the groomer. He's not. The parents are the groomers. They are grooming the child, okay, to be ready to run. The trafficker knows what's going on, and he's just waiting for this, this victim to run. But he doesn't have to groom. He just knows what to tell them that they haven't heard. They're empty vessels, but the parents have done the grooming, but nobody wants to go into parents, because now you're getting into the issues, and it's the parents and their parenting, we'll call it, maybe their culture, maybe it's their religion, their faith, maybe it's how they do it, how their parents did it, maybe it's where they live and whatever. I've run into people, well, you know, because my religion says I can beat my wife and I can do this. Children, you're dealing with religion now. And you're dealing with spiritual things and imams, and you're dealing with pastors, and you're dealing with faith and spirituality. Most mental health counselors do not have any teaching, education, knowledge about that. And the CPS workers are the same here. They are bachelor's level caseworkers, and they just follow the law. And the law says reunification is the number one goal, to get the kids back with the families. And it's really just kind of get them out of our hair. You know, they're troublemakers. And we'll give. Bill Clinton came out back, I guess you guys are old enough, he passed a law that says that the kids, they were languishing in foster care for years. Because the parents go to prison, they go to jail, they fall. Okay. He said, you got 2 years from the time they hit the foster care CPS system. You either start the process back to the family, or you start the process to cut the family ties or move them to a family member out of state. And so their whole goal is to keep them in the family, okay, with relatives or aunts or grandmothers. And being a guardian ad litem, I was in those homes with grandmas, with grandpas, okay, all kinds of things. And a helper who's trying to help these people, okay, if you don't know all the systems that are involved and study CPS, study the law, the crime, the criminal stuff, okay, what trauma bonding, you know, Stockholm syndrome. If you don't study multiple personalities and out-of-body experiences, you can't help these people to come out of this, okay?
I believe these are the ones that so often turn into the career prisoners. They go from, you know, from jail to prison. And,
go and get married and do domestic violence and just do what they saw in their family. And have their own kids and they do the same thing.
That's generational. It's generational. Yes. It's what they learned. It's what they know.
But you know what?
And Michael, let me say something here. Michael, we have to include Michael too, and then I want to go to Mark and see if he has a comment to make about all this. It wasn't that long ago that I spoke to this guy down the street. I try to speak to a lot of the people around here. I live in a tiny town. We have 5 stores. 3 of them are open, okay? Okay, this is where I am. I know. I never thought I'd end up here. But anyway, okay, the price is right. Let's put it that way. But anyway, the guy was so ignorant. I use the word ignorant in the sense. I'm not going to say stupid. I'm going to say ignorant because he lacks the knowledge. Because he
lacks
was brought
up.
Yes. We know that. We use that terminology. But the point is this. He was brought up in a situation where this is how he was taught as a child. This is how he was brought up. He was beaten I don't think this guy was sexually abused. But all the trauma that he saw, the violence in the family, So, yes, he is going to be the guy, if he doesn't go to jail, maybe he's in and out of jail from time to time, he is going to be the guy who's at the end of the bar. He's drunk. He goes home. He takes it out on the kids. He takes it out on his wife. And this is what the children end up knowing. This is what they see.
Uh-huh.
And according to the statistics, now, with this, those who are sexually abused, 70% of us do not abuse our children. 30% of us do. That's an approximate. Now, with those who are physically violent, they weren't sexually abused, but they came from homes where they saw violence, which is horrific, and, you know, just to even watch it. But you're in that atmosphere. You're in that. That's a part of your fabric. This is how you grew up. Then the stats are higher on that, that you're going to turn around with if you don't get the help you need. If you don't recognize that you need help and get the help that you need, then you're going to do the same thing to whomever marries you and you have children with. And then those kids, it just goes on and on and on and on until somebody breaks the cycle. That's the way it is. Someone has to break the cycle. Isn't that right, Michael?
Yes, it is. You know, I think that out of all the offenders that I would interview or interrogate,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's funny how, you know, we can walk into an interview room with somebody and kind of like know from the get-go that this person is not going to admit. He doesn't want to talk to us or admit to us about this criminal thing that he knows he's done that's going to put him in prison for the rest of his life. He doesn't want to talk about that. But almost every single one of them, if we open that door or that window, right, to get them to, you know, see what they're willing to bite on, what they're willing to talk about so we can get that conversation moving, almost every single one of them will talk about their history and talk about the things that has happened to them. And that usually becomes that great motivating factor in that conversation to get us to walk them down that road of how it is that, you know, you went from that victim, you know, era of your life into this offender era of your life. There's a crossover. There's an overlap, right, of victim and offender. And, you know, we had talked about it before, but, you know, that ACEs study with the adverse childhood experiences kind of outlines that fairly well. And, again, you're always going to see that, you know, and it's one of those things that we can, if we're asking the right questions, we're going to get those answers. But it's very, very prevalent.
One of the things I learned when I was, called both mental health wise and as a pastor, I knew that everybody that I would come into contact with had issues. I didn't have to ask them a lot. So I could come in with love and say, yeah, I know it was rough for you as a kid. And I would talk to them as children. You know, I would use little, you know, a female sometimes is less threatening. And even though you have to get them to admit things. But a lot of times, you know, like you said, they'll talk. If you have that pleasant personality or spirit, or you, because a lot of times they want to talk not about what they did, but about what happened to them, and it's sort of sometimes all messed up, you know, and they'll use one word, and you know they are afraid of jail and stuff, and you're dealing with a criminal who's done crimes against a child, but it was done to them, so. One of the great things to watch, remember O.J. Simpson when he they said he killed his wife and that guy? He says he didn't do it. A guy named Shorley did it. And you have to listen to that too. Some of these people, what's your name? Well, I am Bill. But Bill didn't do this. William was the perpetrator. They have different names. So sometimes if you don't know that, that's their, what's happened to them is the another great movie for you to watch is, have you ever seen The Cell with Jennifer Lopez? Anybody seen it?
Not with Jennifer Lopez. I'm not familiar with that.
You go watch it. She was a therapist who had the ability to go inside somebody's mind. She was trying to help a child, a little boy with autism, to reach him so he could talk. Well, they brought in a guy, the police did, and he had captured a senator's wife or somebody, a girl. She was going to die. They asked her to go inside his mind to try to find out where this person was. She ran into compartments, little kids, demons, horrible, wicked people, different names of people, inside of one body. And that's what you're dealing with when you're dealing with the adults. They compartmentalize their childhood. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was Bill that did that, or maybe it was the father who's a different person. And the police aren't trained in this either. CPS work, they're bachelor's level social workers. And a lot of them, they just want to clear the numbers out of the file and get them out of their hair. And it's just so many that they just want to get them back to the, and just go away, so to speak. And you got foster parents trying to, they end up having to do therapy with the parents and the kids. And, you know, you got people that don't know anything about nothing. And, you know, they don't understand drug trafficking, cartels. They don't understand trauma bonding. They haven't read any true stories or books. They don't know. And they get taken advantage of. And I had to learn the hard way, okay, trying to help people. And, you know, you've seen another great movie of trauma, Three Faces of Eve.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of them, too. Yeah.
And there's the true stories, and there's plenty of them out there for people to watch, read about how the therapist, the nurses, the Suffer the Child is an excellent book about how the system works with kids that have been abused. Read true stories about it and how the psychiatry works, how psychology. But none of that's taught to mental health counselors at the master's level. A few psychologists get dissociative identity disorder, but not all of them. They do have the MMPI, the personality inventory. Your CPS, your social workers and foster care, they don't get any of that. The police don't. You know, you can be a good police interrogator, but unless you understand the ACA trauma bond, when you go to interview them, they got their front up. They got the protection up. You ain't getting past that. And sometimes you just got to look in the eyes and go, sweetie, I know all about what happened to you. I already know. You don't have to. And that just breaks the barriers down. So I'll let somebody else talk.
Yeah. That's like the mirror of the soul, the eyes. Let's see what Mark has to say. Mark, even listening to this, and I agree that the departments need to work together more, so with psychiatry and the police departments and so forth and so on. And but on the other hand, there's such an influx. There's so many kids. There's so many people that are committing crimes. And the children, too, they're committing crimes. They're going into juvie. They don't even, the system is overfilled. It is. And there's not even time, for God's sake, to give them all of the knowledge that they need to know how to work with a child, say, a juvenile delinquent, someone who's in their teens, to make them whole. And by that time, they've already been, unfortunately, they've already seen far too much. But, Mark, what do you think about this?
Well, I agree that there probably should be a lot more working together between all the different departments. And I think Pam has brought this up, even before she was on NASCA and that, that, you know, mm-hmm. she always felt like you should have a well-rounded support system, and that would include, in you know, a social worker, trauma-based social worker, therapist, whatever, mm-hmm. a good support system that you can go to, and plus, you know, even if you're in the situation to take it to court to have a legal system, a legal support, and have all of them working together for you, you know, that's what she always felt was, you know, beneficial for someone. But then when I noticed earlier when you were talking about, like, CPS and that, mm-hmm. I'm just thinking out loud, but I just keep thinking that maybe there should be more education for them, because, you know, if, you know, doctors are professionals, they got to go for 8 years, dentists 8 years, lawyers 8 years, and they're dealing with public and sensitive things, you know, on a person's lives, and here's CPS and social workers are too, and then they just, I think someone said, they just go to their job 8 to 5. Now, I know there's a lot of, there are some who take it very serious, and I had a friend who was involved with, you know, CASA in Pennsylvania, and he took it serious, and he even helped them after hours. And I know I can speak for Pam, you know, my wife, that she talks to people, you know, they call her, and she'll talk to them and try to see mm-hmm. them through things and help them. But overall, I'm just thinking that maybe if there was more education and more communication to deal with concurrent, apparently these issues are more seen these days than maybe they weren't. But now that's, I'm just thinking out loud. That's just me. And, you know, I'm not one for myself going back to school, but I just see if you're going to be a professional, you know, maybe, you know, get all the knowledge and education you can, you know. Because I know, mm-hmm. like you, Carol, and I know Pam does, they go on the Internet, and they're looking for stuff, and they're trying to learn stuff and seek out things. And I think, you know, you want to go that little extra mile to learn so you can help, you know.
That's right.
In any situation.
That's right. And then also, too, I have worked a lot in the field. But let me tell you something that's funny, because since you brought it up, you don't even realize you brought it up. Quite a few years ago, I decided that I was going to go and work for DIFAS, okay, Division of Youth and Family Services. And what a laugh that is. But anyway, okay. I was down in Elizabeth area, Elizabeth, New Jersey, which is close to the city, and but not in the city of New York, okay? It's close nearby, and it's a very rough area. So I decided that I was going to go down there, and I went, and it was actually posted in the paper. We had newspapers back then, okay? This is how long ago it was. So I decided, let me go work there because I have a lot of experience. So I went there, and all we did was stand in a line. This is no lie. We stood in a line. We were given papers, and all they wanted was our name, our address, a little history about us, and educational level. That's it. And we were hired. I said, what? Are you I took that paper, and I'm looking at the people around me in the classroom here. It was held in a school where we could go and do this. And I went up to this lady who gave, you know, handed out the paperwork, and I said, are you for real? This is it? This is what you want? You don't care about where I came from, really? You don't know that I've been out there. You don't understand the schooling that I've taken, and I'm going to plan on taking more, which I had to anyway. But you're not asking any of those questions, any of those, or you're not giving, you know how often they give you a test, and it seems like, and you know what I'm talking about, Deborah, the test is, it seems like the questions have nothing to do with the topic, but they judge your personality, they judge your, you know, your whole mental system and all this other stuff just by the way you answer what they're asking you. There wasn't going to be any of that either. Yeah, you know what I mean. There isn't mm-hmm. going to be any of that either. And I said, I don't want to work for you. I walked out. It was weird. So when Mark said, when you said that, you know, more needs to be done where people need to have more education, and Pamela and I, you know, we continue always to look up things because I always want the latest stats. That's what I look for, what we know them to be, okay? It's hard because a lot of people don't agree on that. So, and then, of course, more information, hoping that there's more out there. You know, this is how we continue at this point to educate ourselves, because I want what we give to the public, to, you know, to the people that listen to this show and what gets out there, to have the latest, you know, the latest information possible. So, the, yes, that's very true. Michael, you know, too, that in the police department, one night I did a presentation, and it was all for police officers over at one of the universities, main universities that I spoke at, to teach them about child abuse. They didn't know enough about child abuse. You do. You're a detective. Now, come on. You've seen it. You've worked it. You've been in the field for a long time. But these people, I guess they were like rookies. I hate to call them that, okay? These are the ones going into the academy because they're taking my information that I was giving them back to the academy. So, all right, they knew nothing about child abuse. So in the course of the studies that they had already taken, that wasn't one that was included. And I think that I think that's a mistake, and I let them know that. Because when you are called, which I mentioned just the other day, I think I was talking about you, I don't know, when a police officer, say a police officer is called to a crime, all right, it's going to be a crime, they think it's a crime, whatever, they don't know what they're going to, they don't know, it's domestic violence, they don't know what they're going to see when they get there, because those people could have knives or guns or samurai swords for all we know, right? And the police are walking always in danger, too, and people don't take that into consideration. And that makes me very angry because I've worked with the police, and I've seen what they've dealt with. So, but I think that education-wise, that police officers, too, need to be more educated on child abuse and domestic violence. And do you have courses now coming out that you have to go and, you know, take or... What's going on with that?
Yeah, there's been, throughout the years, there's been, at least in Texas, and I can't speak for everywhere else, you know, and every state's going to be different, and the federal system will be different, right? But at least in Texas, it seems like every few years there will be a big push in regards to something. And I remember we were, you know, maybe a couple of years ago, there was a big push that they, you know, became legislatively mandated that police officers had to be trained in canine encounters, you know, of all things, just so that it reduced the overall number of how many times a police officer was shooting somebody's dog because of a situation that, you know, they felt like they couldn't avoid. So there's been a lot of training that's come out. But interestingly enough, in the last big push they had in regards to child abuse topics, they called it special investigative topics, where they made it a mandatory thing, and it wasn't something that they had to, you know, officers had to get like recurring training on. It was just something that you had to take in the academy, and then you had to take it again before you could, you know, get your next level of peace officer certification through the state, right? Because they have different levels. They'll have a basic, an intermediate, advanced, a master's level certificate that you'll earn throughout the course of your career. Well, you know, that's kind of where we, you know, at least where I'm at, our unit focuses a lot on the fact that we see the same gaps that you guys see in regards to that. It's not just a universal problem with respect to police officers. You know, a lot of your district attorney's offices, many judges, you know, social workers of all shapes and sizes are not getting the specialized kind of training that they need on this topic.
That's right.
And
that's
seeing
right.
that as being an issue, you know, I've always been one of those kind of people. I'm like, well, if nobody's going to go out there and do this, you know, I'm going to have to do it, you know, and if I don't do it, who's going to do it? You know, so me and my wife, who's also a detective at the agency, we sat down one night back in November of 2020 and, we had discussed that, and I told her, I said, you know, I've been in this work now for a while. It's been a few years, and there's not a law enforcement association at all anywhere in the United States that covers crimes against children. You know, there's about a dozen different homicide investigator associations. There's several gang investigator associations. You know, almost every state has their own hostage negotiations associations, you know. But there's not one in the entire United States that covers specifically crimes against children, and which is outrageous to me, because there's a lot more professionals working child abuse if you consider CPS and nurses and counselors and all the, you know, forensic interviewers, all these people in that multidisciplinary team network, the children's advocacy centers, you know. There's a lot more professionals out there that work child abuse than any other type of crime, which is a good thing, but we're not as unified as we should be, and we don't have the universal training requirements or resources that we should have. So we started putting some things together, you know, and I was getting in contact with doctors and people that were experts in that field, you know, lawyers, and we started putting some things together. But one of the things that we did was we started a nonprofit organization called the National Crimes Against Children Investigators Association. And the scope of the project was to help to bridge those gaps for police officers and social workers and attorneys. And you know, we've even, we wrote it into our bylaws where, you know, you can, in order to qualify as a member for that, for the professional training aspect of what we do, you could be a prosecutor, you could be a CPS attorney, or you could just be a family law attorney that sometimes gets appointed to act as a guardian ad litem. You know what I mean? If you're an ad litem attorney that represents children, hey, guess what? You know, you qualify. So, you know, it's something that we've been, so far we've had a lot of interest in the professional community in regards to that, because, and I keep saying this, but other than the Dallas Crimes Against Children conference that they do every year, there is not training that's specific or procedural, you know, in regards to this stuff. And even the Crimes Against Children's conference, they do 400 courses that you can take, you can choose from, you know, you go for like 4 days, and every one of the courses is about an hour and a half long, you know, and you can't really get into the nuts and bolts of what you need to in an hour and a half. It's kind of a teaser, you know.
We
would like to take a departure from that is I do want to get into the nuts and bolts. I want to talk about the statutes in the state that you're in. I want to
talk about
statute limitations and how to build those cases, because, you know, and like we talked about earlier tonight, you know, the burden of proof on police officers is beyond a reasonable doubt. That's 98, 99, 100% certainty in order to convict somebody in a criminal court. You know, a police officer that's out there on a street, you know, makes a DWI arrest. I mean, that's just probable cause. That's not, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt level of proof. Now, CPS workers are in the civil courts are working with a completely different level of a burden of proof, which is what's called preponderance of evidence, and that's only 51%.
Right.
I mean, if you hit 51% certainty, you can do quite a bit in a civil courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
But just like she said earlier, judges are not, you know, almost every state does treat children like tangible property of their parents. The laws are very similar as they, you know, with how they would treat somebody's car, you know. It's very similar in regards to how they treat people's kids. They do not, judges are really not motivated to remove kids. And what's interesting about that is the CPS investigations are the ones that are providing the information to the state in regards to that. To where that judge can make that determination. And the type of investigations that CPS does and the type of investigation like a unit like mine does are completely different. CPS is typically in and out of it in a couple of weeks. And we're, and you know, I've got cases, I'll tell you right now, I've got cases open right now. I've been working for 2 years. And the type of invasive actions that we take, CPS workers just legally typically can't do. They can't go execute search warrants. They can't go get subpoenas for people's records and things of this nature. We have in regards to how we investigate crimes, but you know, just in the intent of at least, and I can say this is probably this is going to be a universal concept in the United States, but in Texas we have a law that requires of us to work these cases as a multidisciplinary team through a children's advocacy center is kind of like our command central station, okay? And we're even like, I'm not even officed at the police department. I'm officed at the children's advocacy center with the forensic interviewers, with, you know, CPS caseworkers, with the counseling people, with, you know, medical staff, okay? Everybody that's there, family advocates, okay? Prosecutors even. And what's great about that is, or what should be great about that is, if we work those things together and we're constantly sharing information, you know, CPS should have the means to take that information that we have to provide and give it over to those civil court judges to help them better make those decisions. And what
make
we've seen in our
decisions.
Jurisdiction in regards to that, yeah.
Right.
And what we've seen
right.
in our
make
jurisdiction
better decisions,
at least,
Michael.
That,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Our county attorney's office, where I'm at in Texas, will tell you that any case that they have that's got CPS involvement and special victims involvement for any period of time is likely, much more likely to produce the state's ability to work on a termination of parental rights than any single other thing that they have. And that's mm-hmm. And that should be considered, you know, a great testament to the nature of the way that we approach those things together, you know, and we're very, I mean, we're, you know, we're blessed where we are to have passionate people, but at the end of the day, you know, we're very limited in our personnel, our resources, as far as, you know, we've got, you know, I'll tell you, for instance, in our advocacy center last year, we saw 2,400 children, and, you know, the other big cities in Texas, you know, they were hitting it around, you know, 2,000, 2,100. So we saw quite a bit more than they did last year. And what's interesting is, you know, even though we see so many children, there's only six of us. There's only six Special Victims Unit detectives where I'm at. And mm-hmm. we're splitting up a strong majority of those numbers, you know, in between the six of us, okay? And in the same agency, we've got a homicide unit that's got twice the number of people, and they only work, you know, less than 30 homicides a year. It's not that many, you know, but they have 12 people, and we've got six, and we're working, you know, like all every year I'll work probably somewhere in between 60 and 100 life sentence cases, and those are the ones that, like, you know, I can, you know, that are really juicy. I can really sink my teeth into them. I can really get to them, but there's a lot of them that we just really can't get off the ground because we don't have the resources to do it. So
see, now that's what we're talking about here.
Exactly.
We have
two
more callers here. Hold on a second, Michael. Hold on a second. I see that this is good. I see that Mark is looking into it. He has a way of going through the system here. What you're saying is so true. And this is what the point that we're all trying to make here, too, is that if we could all get more education – and if the influx, if the amount of trouble was not, you know, so huge, then maybe we could have more classes, you know, for the police officers and for the social workers and for CPS and you know, DIFAS and DIFAS definitely needs it. Forgive me, but that's the truth. I mean, there's yes, and they do try to sue. You know, people like the organizations like DIFAS, because they went back into the judge said, go back home. And there was a case here right in New Jersey where there was a major problem. I don't remember if that boy was crippled for life or if he actually finally died. I'm not sure. He was only 8 years old. And that judge made him go back home from which he came. You know, and he was in the hospital, and they sent him back home. It decided while he was in the hospital. So you see, with all these things going on in our systems, because we don't understand, maybe the judges don't care enough, maybe they're paid off, Michael. We know a lot of that goes on. You know, whatever the case might be, then our children who come from backgrounds like Deborah and I were speaking about just a little while ago, you know, it's just going to continue to go on and on and on until we all work under the one umbrella I don't know when that's going to be. What that bill speaks about, because we need to do that if we're going to be effective. We need to do that if we're going to help make change. And with the statute of limitations being that they're so different in every single state, all the, you know, someone just the other day, there was Pamela. She was all excited because Mark and she were talking and something had gotten passed in Louisiana with the statute of limitations. And that was a very good thing, or there was no more statute of limitations. There shouldn't be statute of limitations for rape, okay? I do believe that with kidnapping, it's different. Am I correct in saying that? With Kat, with there is no statute of limitations on kidnapping. Is that right or wrong?
It depends on the state. You know, like in Texas, I believe it's about 10 years on kidnapping right now, but we don't have a statute of limitations on child sexual abuse. But we do have one for adult sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it just depends. And I think that the most appropriate course of action for any state today, you know, and if they educate themselves on these issues, they would probably easily land on this. There shouldn't be any statute of limitations on any of those crimes against, you know, women,
children,
anything having to do with, you know, domestic violence, sexual abuse, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Absolutely. And you see, this is what's ruining, you know, our families and our children and our country. Bill always says that, you know, our children are our treasures. Well, they can't be our treasures if they come from these terrible, terrible homes. Where a lot of us from NASCA have come from, you know, we've come from those terrible, terrible homes. And we understand that. And it took me a long time to get my head straightened out so that I could, you know, become effective and do the type of work that I've done mostly in the past, but somewhat now in the future. I still get calls, and I'm the night owl for NASCA. So what do you think about all of this, Deborah?
Well, I think coming from both the mental health side, volunteering in so many different committees in the community, trained with the police and CIT, trained with hospice, trained in, I set in a we'll call it a CPS, adoption program, to learn what their social workers, how they do adoptions, learning about it. I set in the parenting. I have a big view of the whole thing, how it works this way. We see it around this nation, that politicians write the law. It's a God's plan. The judges have to follow the law according to the statute. They have great, okay? Your district attorneys, okay? In some states right now, they're refusing to charge anybody. When you go to family court, there's a lawyer that works for the guardian ad litem for children, but they can't get there without district attorneys, okay? You have multi-layer. The parents have rights. They get lawyers, and they get tough ones. They're fighting for property, okay, a commodity. How dare you take, you're like fighting a drug cartel, okay? For the stuff. Children are nothing to most of society but property. That's all. Okay? So you have these powerful systems. You have to be educated. I've sat in sexual assault response team meetings with sane nurses in the hospital. I've worked in the hospitals. I've worked in the jails. I've worked in prisons. If you don't have those kind of experiences, and you are not respected, but at the same time, here's how the pecking order works. In the criminal justice system, first the law, which is written by politicians. And depending on their political party, they write it certain ways. Then there's certain things you can charge and not charge. You must almost be a legal assistant. But then the judge is given great discretion. He has personal feelings. But the law is to restore the child to the family. It could be grandma. could be an uncle, an aunt in another state. They, for some reason, they believe no matter how bad the child is, the hardest thing I had to judge say, he had to pray every day to break the parental bond. They hate to do it. Okay? So that tells you right there, it's easier for them to put the child with an aunt, an uncle, somebody else, a grandma, a grandpa. So the parent is always going to come back. Okay? So you have to understand that to know what you're working against to help the child. The child cannot help themselves. The parents cannot help. You're fighting powerful systems. You're fighting politics. You're fighting attitudes about what a child is. Are you aware of that there used to be animal abuse laws in this country, maybe the early 1900s or something. And the first case of child abuse, they had to file it under animal abuse. Children were nothing but property, don't be fair, because there was no laws to protect, okay? They can have them, throw them away. Nobody cares. And in social work, once you have to get out there, I've been to Washington, and the social workers, they control and have a heavy grip on CPS. The lawyers are involved. The judges, they're kind of caught in the middle. The politicians, your state politicians write the laws, and then they're in there. But they give the judge discretion, and he's lobbied. And he's a political party. I've seen it. I've been on jury trials, okay? I've observed it, and so you understand the tremendous, we'll call it, issues, which are many, you are not ever going to solve. Okay? It's too big, too many different players. It's like you take a piece of pie, you put the child in the middle, and slice that thing up into as many pieces as you can. And that is how many different systems and laws and people. Everybody's trying to control, be the boss. Their way is going to work. They're going to get, there's money involved. There's grants. There's research. Okay? There's nonprofits trying to get money. Money's involved. You have to know that going in. I said in there, they don't want the pastors in there. They don't want Christianity in there. They don't want, here's what they did in substance abuse. The substance abuse people, they know the churches have something that addicts need and that help them. There's some kind of peace in there, they said. Went to a meeting on faith and substance. They want us to allow them into our church to sit next to us. Don't judge them. Don't talk about sin. Don't do anything, but just love them. We will tell you, church people, what you can do, that these are our people. These are our property. We control their therapy, their healing. We control their diagnosis. We control them through the legal system. You can't step into this. You will do what we tell you to do in the state of Florida. In the state of Florida, the psychologist decided we don't want pastors to counsel people with mental health diseases because they don't have a license. So we're going to take the word counseling. We're going to legally tie it up in law. You cannot counsel. So what happens is because people were going to pastors for help, and they weren't charging anything. There's money involved. And this one pastor, he was dealing with a guy who had schizophrenia or something. And he quit taking his medication. They sued him. He said, I didn't do counseling. I did biblical discipleship. Pastors, they want what we have, but they don't want us there. They don't want God in there. They don't want any spirituality, any religion, no prayers. It's therapy, medicine, the law, and people like NASCA get, and all of us, we get frustrated. We see the problems. And we know they should change, but they're not going to. So you either have, and if you get into them, now you can do a lot of education online. You can make the videos. You can just kick it. Okay, that's no problem. And people want to help, but then they get in there and, okay, you're dealing with, I'm going to just say, you're dealing with some heavy-duty drug issues, cartels, pimps, people that make money off of these kids, and they donate money to what's going on. You're dealing with bigger issues than what you think you're dealing with. And
that's
you have
right.
to know that going into it. And you could have all the good intentions, okay, and the police do all the investigation. They get into court, and the DA decides not to charge it. He's the one that makes the decision, not the police. And then the family court judge, he's torn. Well, they belong. Why do they belong with their parents? Something is there that says they need to go back. Why? Because your egg and your sperm did this. And you've had no therapy. You've been a drug addict. Your whole family's abusive. We got the report. And we're going to put this, but that's what they want, reunification. It's a temporary stop into foster care. Temporary. Because they're hoping some way that the parents, well, and they get visitations. I have seen parents who are divorced, a judge forced the parents to go visit with their alcoholic father, and they didn't want to.
Yeah.
Okay.
That
but
happened with me and my children.
Father,
go ahead.
Because mm-hmm. the father has rights. He gave a seed,
mm-hmm.
a sperm.
Mm-hmm.
That is all. But that is how the laws, you have to understand it. You'll get frustrated trying to hope for things to change. You just educate yourself, and when you mm-hmm. do the best you can, and then what you do is you know that the system's really against them and us. And then if they
okay,
come
let's stop
adult.
For a second. Let's stop for a second. I have someone here who's been online for quite a while.
Oh,
her
okay.
name is.
I don't even know what
yeah.
time it is. So.
Oh.
Go ahead.
You know, my computer's off at the time. It says 9:19, but I don't know.
Off.
What time is it? Anybody know?
I don't have my.
I don't know.
Computer
it's probably, I think it's probably about 9:19. All right.
Okay.
We have Jessica from, I guess it's Delaware, is that correct? And she's been
That's
hanging
correct.
On here for a while. Okay, hi, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, family. I'm doing really well. Thank you all so much for calling on me and for all for your participation. What a great topic tonight.
Mm-hmm. You bet. You bet. And, you
I
know,
so much to say, and I really am enjoying the discussion about, you know, CPS and the yeah. goal of the system being to reunify the child with the family. I agree, you know, I'm a former criminal prosecutor from Miami and a mm-hmm. survivor of child sexual abuse myself, as you guys know. And, mm-hmm. you know, I was really shocked after working as a criminal prosecutor and as a defense attorney and as you know, guardian ad litem attorneys in the dependency court, which is what they call CPS court.
Yeah,
in,
right. yeah.
Florida. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I couldn't
yeah.
believe that they would take the child out of a dysfunctional home, treat the child, and put it right back into the home without recognizing, you know, every single person in that family is living in their trauma. The parents are coming from trauma. They're reliving their trauma. They're in a relationship with each other and their addictions because of the trauma. They're recreating the trauma in the childhood. And if you take that child out and, God forbid, put it with the grandparents who started all this intergenerational trauma,
yep.
it makes it worse. Not better.
Yeah,
and we've got a huge machine of hundreds of thousands of really well-meaning people who are underpaid and overworked and want to help kids, and yet the very system that's set up to enable them to help the children actually makes it worse.
That's
and I
right.
think it's been well recognized that the dependency courts have become feeder systems that go straight from, you know, juvenile, the homes to the jails, the juvenile courts, prisons,
right.
for addiction, you know, and that's pretty much where it goes. And the ones who end up on this radio show or listening to this radio show, we are the ones who are the boots on the ground who, by some miracle of God, have survived and found each other and are trying to figure out how we can use our legacy to try to prevent the devastating effects that we are still wrestling with ourselves. So I'm just so grateful for this conversation. I think anytime these really important questions are raised, I think, you know, really I'm feeling that the hair on my arms stick up because I just feel so proud that people not only can survive this, but to to seek to really change the system that helps this terrible scourge continue for years and years, generation after generation. So to break the pattern, I think really we're doing the best we can by getting together and talking about this and just continuing to educate, because the judges mm-hmm. that I saw, the prosecutors, are all well-meaning. They wanted to help uh-huh. the kids don't understand what
no, they don't.
Damn-
and,
well, and
I look,
just
Jessica, let me say
sorry,
something
with
this, okay? Yeah, I'm so thankful that you called in, too. This is great. But remember, too, okay, you have the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I call it.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but that's stuck on a lot of people are saying, the good, the bad, the ugly. I saw that movie. It was hysterical. It doesn't have anything to do with me saying it here on the show, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But anyway, let me put it to you this way. We also have a lot of corruption, okay, in the
yeah.
system. We know this, okay? And a lot of times the corruption does get in the way. And there are the good judges. I've known many good judges in the past when I was working with Juvie and then detox centers and other places I've been in part of as counselors. But the point is, then you have those that are not so good, okay? And they can be paid off. And just as a quick example, I've mentioned this maybe 3 times in the show. I'll mention it tonight because the group that's here now will understand this, and this too is a problem. It was up in Vermont, okay, up in Vermont, and it was maybe 8-10 years ago now. I've been on this show 11 years. I'm going to say 8 years, between 8 and 9 years ago. There was this judge who let a monster go, a pedophile. He had been continuously raping an 8-year-old boy. 8 years old, as you guys all well know, seems to be a very good, age that they pick on. 8 years old. I don't know why, male, female, it doesn't matter what. It can be from the youngest to the oldest, but 8 years old is very popular for them. Anyway, this poor child had been raped many, many, many times by this person. It went to court. Because he was a first-time offender, okay, he got a slap on the wrist. He got probation. He got probation. Now, this is during the time when a certain guy was on TV. I'm not going to mention who it was. But he sent a crew of Fox 5 news people out there to harass, if you will, and to ask questions of this judge. They followed this judge everywhere. If he went into the men's room in the courthouse, they were in the men's room in the courthouse. I'm serious. They followed him home. They followed him everywhere that he went because of the decision that he made that day in that courtroom. That judge stepped down finally. He couldn't handle it anymore. He knew he was wrong. And if he was paid back, I don't know if he, paid rather. I don't know if he gave the money back or if he just took it and ran. I couldn't tell you this. But I can tell you that you have good judges because, Jessica, you just mentioned that they have the best of intentions, and a lot of times they do. But then you have those that don't. So we have a multitude of problems in the system, and a part of it, too, is corruption, all right, where people can be paid off. So, until we can get the system stronger and in better condition, it's like having a house with a cracked foundation. It's going to crumble. So when we have our judges that send our children back to a house where the child was beaten, and finally was beaten, either he died or he didn't die. I don't know. That was through Dyfus, like I said, and they were going to sue Dyfus. And maybe they did. That was in New Jersey, where I am right now. But the point is, there's a lot of things that need to be fixed in the system. So what we do, we're the survivors. I'm a survivor of horrific abuse, and I went through all of them. And then I got my head straightened out because a psychologist told me I wasn't crazy, and that was the best high that I ever had in my life. And they helped me get into the type of work that I got involved in. So I had help, and that was from a church. And that was a Catholic church. That was a good one. That was St. James down in Red Bank. I hope you're listening. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Yep.
Well, one of the things that happened, Carol.
Go ahead.
We'll say from church point of view, a church point of view, there's a bad, evil thing down here working against everything that's good and righteous. And it has permeated every system. There are people we know, the guy that was at the coach at Purdue, that guy, that movie producer, it's everywhere. Sex is part of society. It's historical, abusing children. They were just to be thrown away. And what children represent, will they spiritually, are the innocent, loved by God. They're pure things when they're born. And our enemy of, we'll say, God, loves to destroy them and hurt them and abuse them. And he has got his little claws everywhere. And as you said, corruption is there, money is there. People serve sex like they serve politics, they serve corruption. And sex is one of those topics that people don't like to talk about. Okay, it's used to promote, it's used to abuse, it's used, it's a part of our body, it's our eyes are involved, you know, all kinds of things. Why can't they stop child pornography? Why do men have to look at it? Okay, and there's, and the mental health world would just say, you got a problem, take a medication. Spiritually, it goes a different way. But if you get educated, like you're saying, Carol, study, read books, learn. There's a lot of wonderful books about true testimony, the power of love and church and God and people's lives. You do the best you can, whatever situation comes before you. You make sure if you ran into that child, say in heaven, you fought for them legally, even though it maybe went the other way. You pray for them. You can't stop it. You can't, you're not, you know, change the law, the judges. You got so many working parts in the system. You guys aren't involved in the development of social workers. That is a powerful, powerful system. And every university, okay, they've been around over 150 years. They got their little tentacles and everything. You got money, corruption, systems, law, lawyers, okay. You know, in, you got an organization. Do the best you can. Do it right.
That's what we're doing.
Yep. And then it's, okay, maybe
we're going to close the show. Hold on a second, Deborah. We have like, we have 1 minute. We have 1 minute left. Okay, we're going
to
close the show.
Be ready to help and show that love to the adults. Okay.
All right, let me say one thing quickly about all of this. Remember, okay, God doesn't like ugly. I got lucky. I found, but remember, pedophiles go where children go. And that unfortunately means also the camps, the Boy Scouts, and the churches and any denomination. It doesn't matter where it is.
That's
but
right.
we have our boots on the ground. You bet we do. Like Jessica was talking about, there isn't a day that goes by that I'm not trying to figure out some way, you know, to help more. And I'm sure Pamela's the same way too. I mean, we're always, all of us, I know she is, we're trying to help more. You probably heard that 90-second cue. All right. So the point is this. Yes, we're the survivors. We're still standing, and we're still fighting. Okay. So I want to thank everyone that came on the show tonight. It turned out to be a very good show. I'm very thankful for that. And we do need to have, you know, discussions like this. Thank you so much, Michael, for calling in. That's a, you know, that was great. And Jessica, thank you so much. And of course, we have Pastor Deborah here also, and Mark, and myself. And listen, we had a great show. But, yes, people out there, we are fighting, and we are doing the best that we can do. So I want to thank everyone who came here. Take care. God bless you. Watch your back. You have to watch your back these days. And watch your neighbor's back, too. That'd be a good thing to do. Okay. So good night, and God bless.
Blog Talk Radio.